INRE Data Treasury Corp. As much as we would have liked to have shown you people the diversity of our jurisdiction, that will not happen today, unfortunately.
May it please the Court. This final proceeding before the Court, as I'm sure the Court is aware, arises from an ex parte reexamination that was filed against only one of the patents at issue in all of the proceedings, and that being the 988 patent. The reexamination was directed to 29 specific claims in the patent, and I think they can all be referred to as three-tier claims because each claim deals with a remote, intermediate, and a central tier. But each claim also has specific claim limitations that have to be satisfied to demonstrate whether or not those claims are obvious. And what the Board did in this situation.
In your blue brief.
Yes, Your Honor.
At page 10, you say, large banks such as J.P. Morgan, Chase Bank, PNC Bank, have confessed in open court that the 988 patent is valid. Where in the record are those confessions?
Your Honor, looking at the blue brief, I don't see a cite to the joint appendix.
Nor do I. That's why I just asked you the question. Okay. You're the lawyer.
Yeah, I do not believe they're in there, Your Honor, though I do believe that those pleadings are public record and the Court could take judicial notice of them, or we would be happy to supplement
them
if the Court would like them. If we had cited them, they should have been in the joint appendix. Yes, Your Honor. The references at issue in this reexamination primarily consist of it's a total of six references, but three of them are used somewhat interchangeably to demonstrate what the Patent Office and the Board believe to be the well-known nature of three-tier network systems. And those three references are the Cameron reference, the Eckerson reference, and the Weiss reference. For a set of the claims at issue here, each one of those was combined in the alternative with additional references to satisfy additional elements required under the claims. The additional references, of course, were DeLello reference that was cited for the teaching, the alleged teaching of local area networks to connect systems, the Hoovener reference, which is a patent filed in May of 95 to teach wide area networks, the Gear reference, which was a patent filed in July of 96 that was to teach extracting data from documents and receipts such as checks.
In your experience, is it unusual to have a five-reference obviousness rejection? Because for Claim 42, well, I'd say it's four references plus they cite stuff in the background of the 988 spec, so it's almost like a five-reference rejection. When you got to pick elements from five different references and combine them, is that starting to strain the credibility of the obviousness determination?
Your Honor, in my experience, that is quite a few references to have to combine to reach an obviousness determination, and I think that goes directly to why Data Treasury repeatedly argued below that there's no teaching in those references or nothing with all of those references that would cause a person of ordinary skill in the art to decide to pick five separate references, six if you count the statements in the background of the 988 patent, and combine those absent pure hindsight from having read the 988 patent.
Are they all in basically the same field, though, all of these references?
They are not, Your Honor. The Cameron and Weiss references are Department of Defense papers that deal with
Okay, but how about Eckerson, DeLello, Hoovener, and Gear?
Sure. So Eckerson is a publication from a magazine that appears to have dealt with computer information systems.
But it had a three-tier client server. There's a picture from it, right? Titled Three-Tier Deployment Architecture.
That's the point of Eckerson, and that's a point. That title is indicative of a point for the Eckerson case, or the Eckerson reference, is that it discusses three-tier client server architecture. It does not discuss system on it. It's very high level. It's very superficial. And in our opinion,
but your claims, when they talk about a three-tier architecture, are also very high level and arguably very superficial. I mean, I take the reliance on Eckerson simply to be evidence of the fact that it was known, very well known, to link three computers together.
Well, Your Honor, I would respectfully disagree that it was very well known. I think Eckerson itself makes clear that three-tier architecture is cutting edge and has a lot of uncertainties associated with it.
When you say three-tier architecture, am I translating that incorrectly in my mind to really mean linking one computer A to computer B, which is then linked to computer C? That's what you mean by three-tier architecture?
That, Your Honor, that is not what I would mean by three-tier architecture. I think with three-tier architecture, and even described at a high level in Eckerson, and especially as taught by the 988 patent, teaches specific characteristics of each tier so that each tier feeds up to the tier above it in a way that provides overall higher efficiencies of the computer network.
Okay, I suppose that would be in some of the dependent claims, right? It's not in the independent claims.
Well, Your Honor,
interesting individualized features of the three computers.
No, I would suggest that they are in the independent claims in the recognition of what a remote, what an intermediate, and what a central subsystem has to be.
But isn't that exactly what Eckerson shows in its illustration one? I mean, it's got a mainframe, and then it's got
a server level,
and then it's got a desktop level.
No, Your Honor, I think that it does show a three-tier architecture, but it does not describe in sufficient detail how to build a three-tiered system where each of those components work together to accomplish a goal.
Does your patent do that?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe the 988 patent does do that, where it talks about the remote data processing subsystem. Its goal is to capture images and extract data from documents and receipts, and then that's transmitted within and between, but then up to the intermediate system, which is described in the figures for the 988 patent. That's the.
But that's what GEAR does, right? GEAR captures the transaction data from some document.
Well, GEAR does capture transaction data, but GEAR does not capture like the claim 46 requires capturing images of documents and receipts and extracting data therefrom. GEAR does not do that. In GEAR, imaging and the scanning where the data is captured are completely separate elements. Scanning is identified as element 6 in the figures, and imaging is simply taking a bitmap picture and sticking it in a storage file in case somebody needs to look at it later. So GEAR doesn't teach capturing a document and an image and extracting data therefrom to then transmit it on through the rest of the system. That's a shortcoming of GEAR. Now, GEAR does deal with, to Judge Moore's previous question, it does deal with the banking industry. The Hoovner reference deals with credit card transactions, financial transactions, and trying to identify specific individuals or validate a person's identity at a point remote from a database. And then DeLella involves DeLella is an interesting reference in the fact that, if I may back up a little bit, there's a motivation to combine that was cited by the examiner, stated by the examiner without support, and then carried forward through the board's decision and repeated by the director, and that's the statement that the examiner made. I believe it's at JA-528 of the brief, that a person would be motivated to combine all of these references to obtain the efficiencies that can be done by gathering data from images rather than manual entry. However, DeLella, the only reference in here that talks about trying to gather data from images, is directed at trying to solve a problem with gathering data directly from images. And DeLella specifically says and points out in column 1, and this is at JA-5198, and backing up a little bit, the problem that's attempting to be solved by DeLella is for the computers to automatically read the courtesy amount on a check, which is the handwritten dollar amount written on a check. And the problem that Dalella is attempting to solve is as stated in column 1 at line 26 to 29. It says, while touching or overlapping numbers on a document can be read routinely by a human operator, such numbers cannot be read accurately by character recognition apparatus. So that site and that statement in Dalella directly contradicts the unsupported statement made by the examiner of a motivation to combine because gathering data off the images is more efficient than doing it manually. Dalella even recognizes that at least as of that time.
What if anything, do you understand the board's argument to be or fact-finding to be regarding motivation to combine? About the only thing I got out of it was it would be more efficient, for example. Check scanning would be more efficient. I mean, is there something else? I mean, I realize it's not your position to argue their point. Clearly, they'll get to that when they get up. But, I mean, would you like to respond to that?
I mean, well, I think, Your Honor, that's my point with the Dalella reference. It's the only place where there's a specific motivation to combine all these references is in the final office action at page 143. It's Joint Appendix 528. And the examiner says that since gathering data by an imaging subsystem increases the efficiency over previous manual methods of inputting data, that's the motivation combined. No citation supporting that sentence, no reference supporting that sentence. Well,
why would they combine Ericsson with that when Ericsson expressly says building three-tier architecture applications isn't easy and there's relatively little real-world experience to shed light on the process?
And, Your Honor, that goes directly to our point is that those statements and others like it in the Eckerson reference, if anything, teach away from combining these references and would discourage a person of ordinary skill in the art. Perhaps a person of extraordinary skill might see something in there that they could try, but we don't believe a person of ordinary skill would.
Your time is almost up, but I would like you to take a moment because you have an unusual motion, and I want to give you a second and ask you to address it. You've made a motion to the court to ask us to cause the government to pay a portion of the fees associated with the production of the appendices. Would you mind addressing that for a second?
Sure. I'll briefly address it, Your Honor, and for the most part we'll rely on the brief for that. But in the joint appendix, a huge section of it, and primarily it's volume 2, which you can see in my copy has tabs for Eckerson and very little else, was included in the joint appendix at the director's request. It's the roughly 1,000-page ex parte re-exam petition, and then was cited for nothing else, as far as I can tell, in the briefing. And as such, the cost of that to get that done and to get the 10 copies made, copies for the court, copies for us, copies for opposing counsel, we would ask that the cost of that section be shifted to the examiner.
The re-exam request included the prior art references, right? So there's nothing wrong with including the prior art references in the joint appendix. In fact, it's probably mandatory.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong with it, and I think we make it clear
so
in our brief.
So that part you're not concerned about?
That's correct, Your Honor. And if it's not clear in our brief, I'll make it clear now we're not asking that the
and
cost
the
for that
issue. And the examiner's answer is okay, right? The examiner's answer
correct,
ought to be part of the joint appendix.
Correct, Your Honor. It's primarily what pervades the volume 2, the petition
the
for ex parte
re-exam request, the content of the request itself.
Correct, Your Honor, which is a little over 1,000 pages.
But that's including the prior art references.
I don't think that includes the prior art references. But again...
The re-exam request is something like, I don't know, 250 pages. Then there's a claim chart. It's like 325 pages.
Yeah, by my count, Your Honor, the re-exam request, the narrative portion, yeah, it's 226 pages, and then it has charts that run from JA4342 to JA4666. So I guess that's 324 pages of charts.
Right.
So it's
okay.
Roughly
right.
500 pages.
Okay.
I may have had my math wrong.
Right.
I apologize, Your Honor. If there are...
Okay, we'll save some time and restore some time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gilliland. Mr. LaMarca, please proceed when you're ready.
To start out with the merits, I understood the court was concerned that there were multiple references here for the obviousness rejection, that there were five references. Well, keep in mind, it really isn't as many references as it appears. What you've got is Eckerson, the fundamental base reference, which shows three-tier network architectures were well known. That's the reason that...
You say that they were well known. It certainly discloses the three-tier architecture, but I don't see where it says in them in Eckerson itself that they were well known. Am I missing a disclosure in Eckerson?
Well, not only did the agency rely on Eckerson, but they also had Cameron and Weiss that also showed three-tier architectures, Your Honor. Furthermore, I believe...
Cameron and Weiss aren't part of this rejection.
No, but
so why don't we just focus on this record this rejection?
But you asked me, Your Honor, respectfully, you asked me what establishes that they're well-known, and the agency made...
And you're saying what establishes that they're well-known are something outside the scope of this record?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
It's all within this record, Your Honor. In this record, if you look at the board decision, there are three rejections made by the examiner. The middle rejection is the Eckerson-based rejection, which shows it's known, well-known, to have a three-tiered architecture at the time applicant filed their application.
I don't understand. Is there something in Eckerson that says it's well-known as opposed to simply disclosing it?
Okay.
Because they don't just disclose it. Eckerson goes on to say building three-tier architectures isn't easy, and there is relatively little real-world experience to shed light on the process. That seems like the opposite of well-known. That seems like an acknowledgement that it is relatively new and untested.
I think at the time when Eckerson was published, it was a newer thing, but it was known. Because prior to the filing of the application, which is the critical date here, Your Honor, the filing of the application, at that point, there are multiple pieces of prior art and multiple pieces of evidence that established three-tiered architecture was well-known. You're right. Eckerson says at the time it was published, three-tiered architecture was a new thing. It had been done. People in the computer world knew about it, and they were actually encouraging people to use it because there were advantages of three-tier architecture for growing organizations. That's what our brief says. That's what the board decision says. That's what the examiner's final rejection says. So to clarify, you're correct that Eckerson talks about the developmental aspects of that architecture, but that's known. That is prior art prior to the filing date of applicants and of patentees' applications. So if Eckerson shows that three-tiered architectures were known, all that's left is what about this scanning and digitizing of financial documents or checks or credit card information? Gear is the secondary reference that the agency relies on for that teaching. As you mentioned earlier, Gear shows the scanning of checks in a computer network. You can scan it at a remote location just like the claims require. You can digitize that information. It can be transmitted. And it can be transmitted to, for example, the headquarters at a bank. So it shows computer networks. It shows scanning. The only question then is, would an ordinary artisan know to combine the scanning of checks, like the technology that's disclosed in here, with a three-tier architecture? The agency, the examiner, as well as the board, determined that there was a sufficient rationale to support that combination. We've cited that in multiple places throughout our brief. And one point that I think opposing counsel raised was, I think, at A525, I think, is what he cited. And that shows
the argument for what the motivation to combine.
Yeah, that's where I'm going to take you to, Your Honor.
Because you have to combine Eckerson, Dalella, for example, for Claim 42.
Right.
You have to show me why someone would be motivated to combine Eckerson, an element from Eckerson, the three-tiered architecture, with an element from Dalella, with an element from Hoovener, with an element from Gear, with an element or with some aspects of the background of the 980.
Let's make it a little simpler than that, Your Honor. Eckerson shows three-tier architecture. Gear shows scanning checks in a computer network environment. All we need Dalella and Hoovener for is just to show that local area networks and wide area networks were known. Eckerson already shows networking. It already shows that the first tier and the second tier and the third tier communicate with each other via networks. It just doesn't expressly say the type of networking. Local area networks, wide area networks were well known, as disclosed by Dalella and Hoovener. They're only there for that purpose. In fact, the examiner in this case went back to the original re-exam request, and the reason that we included the request is in part to help have this background in the case. The requester didn't include Dalella and Hoovener. They just said, hey, here's Eckerson. It shows three-tier architectures. They're networked together, and here's Gear. Combine the two. The examiner said, hey, I see all that, and I understand that Eckerson does show networking, but just to make sure, because Eckerson doesn't expressly state LANs and WANs, local area networks and wide area networks, I'm going to go show you that those were well known as well. Here's Dilella, here's Huebner. So that's the only reason that they're there, Your Honor. So it's really not that hard to get through this obviousness rejection. So I don't want to mischaracterize it as being some very difficult picking and choosing of elements, because that's not what's going on.
No, but it is, because each of those elements is required for this claim. You don't just need a three-tier architecture, which is all that's disclosed in Ericsson, right? You need the financial application, the check scanning, which is disclosed in a different reference. You need the local area network to connect the tiers or within each tier, and then you need the wide area network to connect the tiers. Each of those is an element of, for example, claim 42.
Let me take you to page
You're acting as though, oh, we didn't really need all these references.
You know, Your Honor, I'm not acting that way. Let me clarify for you. And if you felt that I was acting that way, let me clarify it for you. Let's go to page 4670 of the appendix. 4670 of the appendix is the Eckerson disclosure.
Yes.
That's what I was discussing. And what you see there is a picture. It shows three-tier architecture. It shows a top tier, which is a bunch of desktop computers linked together in a network. There's a middle tier showing servers, multiple servers linked together in a network and also linked to the top tier, and they show a bottom tier, mainframe computers linked together in a network. So you've already got networking disclosed. The concept of local area networks and wide area networks are not expressly mentioned here, but networking is disclosed as part of Eckerson.
Where?
So do you see those links together, how they're all connected?
Where's the word network?
Well, this is a
picture. Does the word network appear anywhere in the Ericsson reference?
Yes, it does.
Where?
Page 4669.
Okay.
Right at the in the middle of the page, you see where it says a deployment architecture, that paragraph? The fourth line down, it says across a network. It also says on page.
Okay.
There's other pages in here as well that say that. If you go to page 4673, let me get you the sites. Page 4675, I'm sorry, Your Honor. 4675, it mentions network. If you go halfway down the page where the paragraph begins, consider, for example, a company that wants to migrate part of a network. If you go to the very top of that page, 4675, intermediate servers can also support communication gateways. If you go four lines down, data stores across a network. There's no dispute that Eckerson discloses networking. It's three-tier networking. Obviously, a network is a physical connection of computers so they can talk to each other. And the way that's done is if it's locally here in our courtroom, for example, if you and I have a computer and we connect them together, that is, by definition, a local network. If then we link that local network to go beyond that to some other network, that would be deemed a wide area network. So all the examiner did was he said, here's Dilella, here's Huebner. They expressly disclose local area networks and wide area networks.
Neither of which are expressly disclosed in Ericsson, correct?
Correct, and that's why he did it.
Yes.
He did it to satisfy your concern that you're expressing right now that Eckerson doesn't use the exact words local area network or wide area network. So what he did...
Although it's when you know what it means, Eckerson discloses it.
Correct, Your Honor. That's our view. And that's the view that I'm trying to advance right now, and I'm trying to have Judge Moore feel comfortable with that, because I understand her questions. Those are legitimate questions. I'm trying to help you answer them, that there is a network disclosed in Eckerson, and Eckerson shows the linking of computers both locally and beyond the local. And that express language of local area networks, LANs and WANs, which are terms of art in the field, are shown that they're very well known in Dilella and Huebner. That's why the examiner cited them.
Okay, but just to be clear,
right,
the board did not make a fact finding that Eckerson discloses, or that one of skill in the art would know, based on Eckerson, that these combinations of computers can exist in Eckerson, in LANs or WANs, correct? There's no fact-finding by the board that Dilella and Huebner, they're just icing on the cake. You know, really, Eckerson tells you everything that a skilled artisan would need to know. You're trying to make that argument to us that a skilled artisan would know, since it discloses networks, which I thank you for pointing out to me very clearly it does. You clearly know your record well. That's very helpful to the court. So, but I don't understand the board as having found what you're sort of arguing now and what Judge Wallach seemed to almost agree with now, which is that Eckerson, kind of has everything. A skilled artisan would know networks can be connected through LANs or WANs, and Dilella and Huebner are just gloss. They're just you know, two maraschino cherries in the Shirley Temple instead of one.
I didn't say that. I said they were definitional.
Let me, Your Honor, let me first start out by agreeing with you, okay? You're correct, and I agree with you. The board did not...
You can just sit down now, because you've never said that to me before.
Well, I'm trying to show you that I agree, but the board did indeed, if you go to page 15 of the board decision, once again, let's go back to the record and figure out what the board said, and let's not figure out what Mr. LaMarca has to say, okay? If you go back to the board decision, page 15, it's JA 15. It's also 15 of the board decision. Right in the middle, it says, next we turn to the arguments concerning Dilella.
Yes.
The examiner finds that Eckerson teaches networks for transmitting data within subsystems and between subsystems. Okay. Within subsystems is what I was trying to say earlier, are commonly known as local networking. And that will be a LAN.
So then why does the board go on to say, however, Eckerson does not teach explicitly that the communication networks within one system include a LAN as recited?
Correct.
Dilella cures this deficiency.
And I apologize, Your Honor. That's what I tried to say earlier. The examiner recognized and the board recognized that it doesn't explicitly use LAN or WAN, and therefore the examiner went off and found Dilella and Huebner to fill that express language that was missing from here. But nevertheless, the board indeed and the examiner both made findings, and they based on evidence, Eckerson's disclosure, that there's definitely networking between local computers and network between other computers that are geographically dispersed.
To be clear, I don't think that I understand Mr. Gilliland or Data Treasury to dispute the fact, and I might be wrong, but I don't think I understand him to dispute the fact that each of these references discloses an element that is within the claims. I understand his primary dispute to be that there's no motivation to take such a large number of references and smoosh them all together to make this exact claimed combination. And, you know, that's something, you know, that's kind of the whole thing, right? I mean, every chemical, there's only so many elements. Every chemical composition is a combination of existing elements. That doesn't make them all obvious. So what is the motivation for somebody to take a three-tiered network, which is, quote, still immature and doesn't provide services to support a distributed computing network environment? You know, Ericsson is the only reference relied on in most of these rejections for the three-tiered network. And Ericsson itself goes on and on in a whole paragraph talking about how building these architectures isn't easy. There's little real-world experience. These tools are still immature and don't provide all the services needed to support a distributed computing environment. So that's what we know from Ericsson about three tiers. And it has nothing to do with processing financial transaction data, for example.
Well, Your Honor, it does.
Okay.
Eckerson does talk about the transmission of financial information. For example, Eckerson can be applied to bank tellers. It says it right in Eckerson. Eckerson can be used for financial transactions. It says it right in Eckerson.
Okay.
And Eckerson also says, which we didn't mention yet, that it's advantageous to have a three-tier network. That's the whole purpose of the Eckerson publication, was the computer industry.
Well, the purpose was to discuss, because it tells us what the purpose is, discuss the advantages and challenges of utilizing a three-tiered network.
Okay, I agree, Your Honor. But those advantages are the reasons why the examiner relied upon and the board relied upon why an ordinary artisan would want to use Eckerson with something like GEAR. And GEAR, what was GEAR? GEAR was scanning checks, digitizing the scanned information, transmitting the scanned information over a network, albeit not a three-tier network like Eckerson. That's what it was. But an ordinary skilled artisan in that business, let's say a banking entity that wanted to have check scanning and financial documents scanned, Eckerson goes on to say, by the way, organizations like yours that have a network would benefit by stepping up to a three-tier network. Why? Because three-tier networks help you with scalability, with security, with all the things we're concerned about in this invention. That's what Eckerson's about.
What can you tell me precisely, what does the board say is the motivation to combine these three things?
I think the board does agree with the examiner's rationale is what the board says. The board says we agree with the examiner's rationale. And let me see if I can find that for you, Your Honor. For example, I mean, there are multiple places where they reference it, but at page A18 of the board decision, I'll read for you the section that I can find it for you here.
Well, they say the examiner has provided a persuasive reason
right.
E.g., increasing efficiency over previous manual methods of inputting data.
Correct. And that's precisely the purpose of GEAR. GEAR was also to bypass the manual methods of previously trying to deposit a check with a bank. GEAR said, hey, you don't have to do this manually. You don't have to fill out pieces of paper and documents and try to get it all shipped to your bank. You can scan it at your remote bank teller location or at your remote spot where you get your check, scan it in, digitize it, transmit it over. It'll end up at your bank. The bank will end up paying the check. It'll all happen remotely. That's the idea of GEAR. Now, all Eckerson does is get you to the next step. Would that be beneficial to have that in the environment of a three-tier network? And yes, it would. So not only does the examiner here just talk about the benefits of replacing manual methods, but further, if we read throughout the whole board decision, if we read through the whole examiner's answer, all the different places where this comes up, the examiner repeatedly found, and the board did confirm this, that it was the benefit of the three-tier network, scalability, security, transmission. When they say scalability, they mean when an organization grows and they have more and more and more terminals, it's much easier to do that with a three-tier network than with a two-tier or one-tier network. So these are across the board computer networking advantages that apply not just to the GEAR type of network, but all networks. That's what's going on.
Mr. LaMarca, your time is up, but I do want to give you a chance to address the motion that was made for costs related to the production of the appendix. Can you tell us why it's not normal in my experience to see an entire third-party reexamination request in an appendix? That's my personal experience. I don't normally see that, and it's hard for me to understand why it would have been necessary, because it included at least 500 pages of material that really wasn't cited in any of the briefs. That's a lot. I certainly understand the prior art, and I believe that wisely Mr. Gilliland immediately backed down from any claim that the prior art shouldn't have been included. But what about all of the rest of that? I mean, was it just an oops, like, oh, we didn't realize how big it was? Because, look, if it had been 8 pages, you could have just slipped it right in and nobody would have cared. But here it was 500 pages, and it represented, like, $3,000 of cost.
It wasn't an oops, Your Honor. We put it in. I put it in, and I'll tell you why. I want to take responsibility. I made the decision that I thought it belonged in there. I talked to some other people in our office before I did it. The reason is, in this particular case, which is a little different than other cases, in this case, the examiner, in his office actions, he had a non-final office action, then he had a final office action. In both those office actions, and we point this out in our opposition, so I won't bore you with the myriad of citations, but it's in our opposition, he adopted the rationales of the requester, but he didn't reiterate those rationales specifically in his office action. Because he adopted over and over and over again, I felt the evidentiary record was supported by those documents. That's why they're there. Now, in addition to the final rejection...
Why didn't you only take selected pages? Because I actually tracked down, I made my clerk go through and do the adoption records. And what we found was it wasn't very many pages that he relied upon and adopted the rationale of the reexamination requester. In each instance, it was like 2 or 3 pages of information that the re-exam requester had articulated. We often, from you all, routinely get portions of office actions, portions of responses, only the pages that are really relevant to understand what's going on. But here you sort of lumped the whole thing in. And even if I very graciously track down the way you asked me to, that you didn't necessarily do for us, but I nonetheless made my clerks do, you're still talking about hundreds and hundreds of pages that nobody could argue were relevant to his deliberative or adjudicative process.
Well, Your Honor, if you go through the request, and I've got it right in front of me, Claim 42, Claim 46, and the remaining claims, he did adopt those rationales. Those rationales aren't just one page. Yes, on one page he does say, I adopt the rationale. But then if you go to the request where that rationale is, it's done through many pages. Furthermore, there's a claim chart that corresponds to that language that also has those rationales, so we included the claim charts. The point was, and I understand it's large, I understand it's big, bigger than normal, but the point was we wanted the evidentiary record to be complete because the examiner adopted it. The final rejection said that. Furthermore, the examiner's answer specifically says he relies on all of the things that are in his final rejection. In other words, he didn't reiterate in the answer, and then the board even said, we rely on the examiner's answer, and the final rejection. So even the board's decision specifically incorporated and referred to the examiner's answer and the final rejection and those rationales and reasons. So my point was I felt it was important to include the request in order to support the underlying evidence from those. But you're correct. If we really scoured through it, I think we could probably find places to take pages out. But in order to give you context, we included the whole thing. That's what we did.
Okay.
That was the reason. And that, and I think the rest of what we have to say is in our opposition. I don't think I need to add that any further.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. LaMarca. I appreciate how incredibly thorough and well-prepared you were on the facts, so thank you for helping the court.
Thank you for the questions.
Mr. Gilliland, a few minutes of rebuttal time.
And I will do my best to make this brief, Your Honor. I just wanted to respond to a couple specific comments from the director, from Mr. LaMarca, and the first being that they didn't need all these references to teach the claim elements. I think that's belied by the fact that when the office gets to the claims that required, for example, frames, that the data be packeted into frames, the examiner reached out and cited to two additional references that post-date the patent application to demonstrate TCP/IP using frames. Similarly, they pointed to TCP/IP to invalidate additional claims that required a remote data processing subsystem identification information, that being claims, I think it's 84 and 88 to 92, and identifying one remote subsystem used by a customer in claim 122. Again, had to point to additional references to satisfy those additional elements of those claims. So it's not just an Eckerson and a gear answer to this thing where everything else is just sort of filler. It took a lot of references to make the obviousness rejection. And then the only other comment that I wanted to address was the with regard to the motivation to combine, that Eckerson somehow points to financial and bank teller information and how these three-tier networks can be used in those situations is the first. Let me see if I can. Here we go. First, the reference to bank teller is simply a passing reference under a section that's discussing how to build applications within the architecture. It's titled Application Architecture. Subheading under that is Objects Extend Decomposability. And in the middle of the paragraph, and this is at JA4673, there's a sentence, it's the third paragraph on that page, says, for example, an object might be a radio button on a GUI, GUI, or an account summary command in a bank teller application. That's it. That's the only reference to bank teller in the middle of a paragraph discussing object-oriented programming. The next reference is, as it drops down into three-tier deployment architecture, the first paragraph, same page, JA4673, first paragraph under that section is talking about enterprise applications often require three tiers. And the last sentence of that says, by enterprise, we mean applications that support core operational systems that run the company, such as order entry, inventory, distribution, and finance. Again, merely a passing reference in a reference or a prior article that discusses the problems, the shortcomings, and how much work is yet to be done before three-tier architecture, in our opinion, becomes well-known and well-used by any other than a person of extraordinary skill in the art. And unless the Your Honors have any questions, I'll cede the rest of our time.
Okay. I thank both counsel for the argument. The case is taken under submission.